You're listening to the Divorce and Your Money Show, the number one show on iTunes discussing the financial issues in divorce. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and certified divorce financial analyst. You should visit our website at divorceandyourmoney.com. Now, in this episode, we're doing something a little bit different. I'm the one being interviewed by Mandy Walker, a divorce coach in Colorado, and she runs a great podcast that you should check out called Since My Divorce. And the reason she had me on this episode of the show is because we're going to get into taxes. We're going to give you a little bit of an overview. We're just going to scratch the surface, if you will, of the tax considerations that you have during divorce. Now, there's a lot of information in this episode, and it can be a little bit confusing, but stick with it. And as you think about it, the point is this, is that taxes are something you cannot forget about during the divorce process, because making the wrong tax decisions during and after divorce can cost you thousands and potentially tens of thousands of dollars just by checking the wrong boxes and failing to consider some very important things that you need to think about when it comes to your taxes and divorce. So without further ado, here's my interview with Mandy Walker.
Today, we're talking about the common tax questions that come up during a divorce. And these are basic issues. They pretty much apply to every divorce. I've noticed with my mediation clients that it's not uncommon for them to not have given any thought or much thought to the tax issues. And certainly in the forms that Colorado uses, both the parenting plan and the agreement that covers division of property, the tax issues are at the end. So by the time people get to them, they're exhausted, they're fatigued, and they're ready to just kind of come to an agreement or a resolution without necessarily thinking it through or researching what the best options are for them. That's not smart. And once the divorce is final, those decisions are kind of locked in and it's difficult to change them. So we really want you to be thinking about these tax issues up front and early on in the process. So joining me for this conversation is Sean Lehman. Sean is a certified divorce financial analyst, MBA, author, and also has a podcast, Divorce and Your Money. Welcome, Sean.
Mandy, thank you very much for having me on the show.
I'm so excited that you could join us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So let me start off with a first question for you. Tax filing status. So how would you describe what someone's tax filing status is, and how does divorce impact that?
That is a good question and a good place to start. Now, I have to give my disclaimer. As you said, I'm a certified divorce financial analyst, but I am not an accountant, nor am I an attorney. And right. Particularly in divorce, but in any situation, you need to deal with someone who knows exactly what's going on in your life, because the rules are complicated, quite simply. And it's not a hard and fast rule for anything, and there are exceptions to every case. So with that said, when you're in, well, for anyone, divorce or not divorce, you ultimately have four tax status or tax filing options. And they're really grouped into two categories. If you're married, still married, there is married filing jointly or married filing separately. And if you're divorced, there is head of household and single. Now, if you're legally separated but not yet divorced, it's a little bit more complicated, and you'll have to figure out your individual state, which might have an impact on that. But those are the general categories you have, and we can get into each one depending on where you want to go. The only other comment I want to add to that is your tax filing status depends on if you are married or single or divorced at the end of the year. So
on the very last day of the year.
Exactly. So December 31st, if you are still married, even if you get divorced on January 1, you are considered married for the previous tax year. or single or whatever the case may be. But whatever it is on the last day of the year, that's what you need to know.
Right. So, and that, knowing that or projecting that could impact your decision as to when to file.
100%. Well, it's not necessarily when to file, but when the divorce is completed, right? So when to file is certainly a part of that, but ultimately, until a judge signs off and says you are legally divorced, that's the determination. And so, yes, it's a consideration. You know, I say that I see a range of cases with divorce where some take months and many take years. Right. So you won't necessarily be able to predict the time to file. But if you file, let's just say in November, it's likely that you're going to be considered married for that year unless you just have a super quick divorce.
Right. I mean, here in Colorado, they have a pretty strict calendar. If you file and you have all the paperwork and you're in total agreement, you could be divorced in 92 days. So I was tell my clients to really think about that. If they are in that category of having an agreement and ready to file, maybe September, they might want to consider holding off, because it kind of depends on the judge as to whether or not they're willing to hold up the divorce final ruling for to delay it until the new tax year. But so anyway, so deciding whether you want to be, and actually I would say sometimes people want to accelerate the filing process because they do want to file single and get some additional tax benefits because of the advice that they've gotten from their CPA that it might actually save them money.
That's right. We can go through each filing status has benefits and disadvantages, both from a tax perspective and also from a just general how your divorce is proceeding perspective.
Yeah.
And so we could certainly walk through some of the benefits and disadvantages of each one if you'd like.
Well, do you have an idea of how much is that married exemption worth to somebody as opposed to filing singly?
That is a good question. I hesitate to give a specific answer, but I can tell you some things that will have an effect on. Taxes are comically complicated, and there's not a hard and fast answer, but it applies in different areas. There are, your tax rates or your overall tax brackets will change depending upon how you file. You have additional deductions. So if you are married filing jointly, you have a standard deduction, a tax deduction, and a tax deduction, just for clarification's sake, is it's money, broadly speaking, it's money that you can use to reduce how much your taxable income is for the year. But if you're married filing jointly, you get $12,600 as your standard deduction. And if you're single, let's just take the single case, you only get $6,300. It's about half. That's substantial.
Right. So, yes, it could make a big difference for your overall filing or tax position if you were towards the end of the year. So, is there a way, a quick and easy way for somebody to approximate that?
The quick and easy way, or I should say the quickest and easiest in terms of deductions.
Yeah. Or just to figure out, what am I looking at here? Is there a way that they can estimate that themselves just to kind of get sort of idea?
Of course. If you use, an H&R Block or one of the tax accounting softwares, they will give you a pretty good estimate, because the standard deduction is just one of a slew of different items that depend on your income level, number of kids as well, and other things going on in your life that affect that deduction, where your marital status is a variable that determines how much that deduction ultimately is for you and your situation. But if you go to any one of the major tax websites, they can give you a quick calculation as to what you might want to think about or how much you might be able to save.
Okay. All right. So then my next question is, filing single seems pretty straightforward. You're just, you know, in the year that you are divorced, you are going to file single. There's no question kind of about that. But what about married filing separately? When should people consider doing that? It's for when you're still married, but if you've filed for divorce, if you're separated,
I actually brought up two things. When filing singly, this is why I say taxes are incredibly complicated. You aren't necessarily going to file as single. If you have kids, if you don't have any kids, then you'll be single. You'll file as single. But if you do have kids, one of you will get to file as what's called head of household, which has additional deductions related to the children because you pay the expenses. And how that's determined, meaning who gets to file as single and who's head of household, has some complications. But and we can certainly walk through them. But option.
Let's stick with that head of household discussion, and then we'll come back to the married filing separately there, because I think that does get complicated. I mean, if you have two kids, could you both agree to take one kid each and both file head of household?
You can't both file head of household. Now, I don't know. Only one of you can file head of household. I don't know exactly in your specific situation, if you have two kids, can one take the other? But generally speaking, one of you is going to file as single, one of you is going to file as head of household, and one of you is going to be able to most likely claim both of the kids, is the way I've always seen it done.
Oh,
but
really?
Maybe there is something out there, but I've never seen it done that way.
So is head of household different than the child exemption?
It has some additional exemption. So your standard deduction that I brought up earlier, just the standard, that gets taken off of your taxable income for head of household when you have kids, is $9,300 versus $6,300 as a single person. There are also other child-related exemptions that will lower your tax bracket. So there's a standard deduction for kids that's around, I think it's around $4,000, or an exemption, I should say, for kids that's around $4,000 a kid. And also just the way that your tax bracket is calculated, meaning whether you pay a 15% rate or a 25% rate or a 33% rate is a little bit lower when you have the children and you're filing as head of household.
Okay.
Versus
All right.
single.
So deciding who's going to file head of household is part of the divorce negotiations then?
Yes. And generally speaking, the person who has custody of the kids or primary custody of the kids is going to be the one who files as head of household. That said, I see all the time where for whatever reason, and it happens that in the settlement agreement, the other parent, even though they don't have custody or primary custody, gets to keep the head of household status and benefit from it, if that's what you all negotiate.
I'm a little confused about head of household. Like here, what I've seen is we, in Colorado, we do shared parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And so oftentimes with the children, especially, like if there's one child, then the parties will agree to alternate the years in which they can take the child tax exemption.
You can do that, yes.
And then if there are multiple children, we might do something where one party has one child all years. The other party has another child all years. And then even when it gets to the point when they can only take between them one child exemption, then they agree to alternate that.
You can certainly alternate, yes, just not in the same year. You can't do only one person gets the benefit in one year. You can't kind of, you know, overlap.
All right. But then, so you have to just make sure, though, in your agreement, divorce agreement, it's spelled out very clearly how you're going to decide who gets that, who takes the child tax exemption for which child in which year.
That's exactly right.
So I've had, actually this happened to a friend of mine. I mean, it's important because obviously if you both try to claim the same child in the same year, then someone's tax return is going to get kicked out by the IRS.
Yes, you will have a letter. I've seen them. You don't want to get one.
Well, you know, a friend of mine, that it happened to her and she was trying to file electronically and she wasn't even able to file electronically because she was trying to claim the exemption. So as I was thinking about this, I thought, well, maybe the rule is then you just have to be really fast and make sure you're the first one to file.
No, the right way to do it is as you started the show is you should figure these things out. I know it's low on your list of concerns, but you definitely got to just sit and figure them out ahead of time and just knock it out as part of everything else.
Right.
I mean, the simple way to do it. I know you're in a more progressive state than most states for a variety of reasons. But it's generally speaking, in most cases that I see at least, or that I have experience with, one parent is pretty much in charge, or is the primary caregiver to the kids. And generally speaking, to keep things simple and not overcomplicate all the matters, that person is the head of household. Huh. Now, if there are ways and exceptions for and reasons that that's not the case, but on a high level, just speaking generalities, that's the way that people normally do it. But of course, you can structure things however you like. You just need to make sure that it's well communicated as part of the settlement.
Right. You know, this is what I love about doing this show is because just hearing about how practice varies from state to state it's eye-opening. And I think for my listeners, it helps them to understand more that there are so many options available to you in divorce that it's not one size fits all.
Totally. And I have the benefit of working in pretty much all over the country. And so I get to see how people do things differently. And it's definitely eye-opening, and there's tons of possibilities and ways that assets are divided and options you have. And even, working with a variety of different attorneys, you see how they handle and approach different issues. And it's very eye-opening. And it's ultimately, you can go down an endless route of options and possibilities, which just makes the whole experience more overwhelming. But there are also some just kind of general things to think about if you don't want to overcomplicate picture.
Right. So on the child exemption thing, I know one of the proposals when I was getting divorced, one of the proposals we talked about was whether my ex and I should actually converse with our CPA each year and decide which would be the most tax beneficial way to allocate the child tax exemptions. And I think that might be a great solution for some people if mm-hmm. if they have that sort of civil communication and contact and feel confident that they are going to be able to work that out. My personal recommendation is to make a much cleaner break than that. I like to see things spelled out very clearly in the agreement itself, then parties can always agree to do something differently after that. But that just means like having it spelled out means that you do have that safety net and the clarity and the certainty in the event that you and your ex are not able to communicate very well.
I think you're completely correct about that. I mean, you can, you know, you're getting divorced for a reason, and imagine having to go back at the end of every tax year. What if your spouse isn't responsive, or they want to do things at the last minute, and that's holding up your taxes? It can get kind of yes. complicated, and you just want to do as much as you can up front.
Right. And also, I mean, the other thing I wanted to say is you're just never, ever going to cover. You can't cover all the possibilities in your agreement. As much as I like to have certainty and clarity, you can't. I ran into that again with myself when my ex is able to take the exemption for my daughter. I take the exemption for my son. He's at university in Utah and was wanting to get Utah residency because they allow that so that he can get in-state tuition. Mm-hmm. Well, that meant the year that he was trying to qualify for that, I couldn't take him as an exemption. So, you know, our agreement never envisioned that sort of situation.
Exactly. As I said, you know, I think you're right, and that's a great example, is there's endless possibilities and things that can happen. And so, you know, it ultimately boils down to what you want, but life throws curveballs.
Yeah, so... Well, Sean, let's just I want to go back to married filing separately.
Yes.
But before we do, let's just take a short break. I'd like to remind our listeners, I'm Mandy Walker. This is Conversations About Divorce. Today, we're talking about the common tax questions you need to think through with your divorce. My guest is Sean Lehman. Sean is a CDFA, a Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, an MBA from Texas. Sean has a podcast, Your Divorce and Your Money. And Sean, you have a book. Do you want to share with our listeners a little bit about your podcast and your book?
Sure. So I spend a lot of time trying to educate people and tell them about their options. I think one of the biggest issues in divorce is people don't know what they don't know. And there's a lot of unique things that happen just during divorce. It's a separate area of the law. There's a lot of financial concerns, which is my main approach, that occur only when you're going through the divorce, that won't happen any other time of your life. And so I do what I can to help people and educate them on, particularly the financial side, all of the various things to them. So I have a book. It's called Divorce and Your Money, The No-Nonsense Guide. It's on Amazon, and it just walks through all of the major financial considerations that are unique to the divorce process. And I also, as you said, I have a podcast on iTunes. It's called The Divorce and Your Money Show. And I also have a series of courses on my website, but one of them is called Divorce 101, Steps to Take Before Divorce, that you pay for, and it walks you through all of the major things you need to think about, and an overview of the divorce process. So anything I can to kind of level the playing field and help people figure out what's going on this crazy process.
Yeah. Well, those sound like great resources. And I've been following you on your Facebook page and love some of the posts that you post up there too.
Oh, thank you.
Let's go jump back to that question about married filing separately. So just to remind our listeners, we're talking about tax filing status here and how you decide what status will apply to you. So can you give some guidelines? When do you see people deciding to opt to file separately, even though they're still married?
Yeah, it's rare that you do it, but there are some cases. Look, you very, very simply, I always take a high level approach before drilling down into the details. But under normal circumstances, even during divorce, if you're married, you file jointly because it will lead to the lowest tax bill. And you get to keep more of your money, unless you want to pay more taxes, which maybe you do. But, you know, you file separately under a few conditions. One is if you think that your spouse is doing something fraudulent.
Okay.
If you know, and I have a case right now where this is a very big issue. But if you think your spouse is hiding money or doing something illegal or is involved in a questionable business, then that is a time where it might not be wise to file jointly. Because if you sign your name to a tax return, you are also legally saying that you are responsible for, you know, that the information is accurate, and whatever the IRS says, you are responsible for the outcome. So one is fraud or something suspicious. The second case is if you think the information is just wrong for whatever reason and you don't trust it, not necessarily fraudulent, but just doesn't all fit your picture. And then the third situation isn't really a situation, but it's just a general thing, is if you wonder, well, I'll just leave it at those two, but those are kind of the main, if there's something suspicious going on, or something that makes you uncomfortable or gives you pause, those are the, that's the main reason to file separately.
And so, like, if you went, you don't have to coordinate the timing of filing separately with your spouse, but you presumably would have to tell them that you're going to file separately and that you're going to go ahead and file.
That's right. It's not an easy thing to do, and it's not an easy conversation, but that's correct.
And presumably, if you went ahead and filed separately, then your spouse can't file married jointly.
That's right. Yeah, that's right as well. If you're filing separately, it's basically saying, I'm a single person, but I'm legally married. So I'm just going to go and do things on my own.
Okay. All right. So that's something for listeners to keep in mind. I've run into situations where, one spouse has absolutely no idea of the household finances, really, and isn't privy to any of that information, and they may be behind on filing their taxes as well. So I've usually sent them to a CPA to talk about their tax situation and to discuss whether filing separately would be a good option for them.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, the thing to is particularly in those types of situations, which is very, very common, you know, if you're signing your name to that tax return and something gives you pause, and the IRS or whatever else were to come knocking on the door later, things can get very messy for you, even though you weren't necessarily involved in the finances. You're still signing your name to it, so you have to be very comfortable with what you're signing.
Okay. So let's just, if you are going to be filing jointly, then I guess it's important to try and agree on timing and when you're going to file, if you're going to need an extension, and then how to handle any payments that are due and any refunds that are coming.
That's correct. I mean, that's all exactly right. I mean, the only thing I'd add is for the refunds is you will know your anticipated refund, and you can use that as part of the settlement negotiation as to who gets it or if it offsets, you know, another asset. But otherwise, you'll probably have a pretty good sense of whether you have complications in your taxes where you'll need an extension. Because even so, you have to make estimated payments when you file for that extension. So you'll kind of figure out what's right for you. And unless something's changed majorly, it'll be whatever you did in the previous years. So, you know, you'll have a pretty good sense in advance.
So the thought that occurred to me when I was, you know, thinking through on this show was too that with the refund, if you have filed your taxes and told the IRS to send it to a joint bank account and that bank account is going to get closed as part of the divorce, you better make sure that it stays open until you get your refund.
That's right. I have, it's funny you say that because I had an issue, a personal issue myself where I was owed a refund from years past as I had a new set of accountants just overlook all of my prior tax returns and make sure there weren't any mistakes, and calling the IRS and trying to get that refund from previous years. It's a multi-month long process for them to change your address, and I will leave it at that.
Okay, all right. So be careful. And I'm working with clients right now where she's just going, really just starting her own business and starting to earn income. He's the major income earner, and they're trying to figure out in their agreement, like they'll file married jointly next year. But the agreement, the forms that Colorado has them use, has asked them to specify how they're going to pay for any amounts due. And in that scenario, rather than saying just 50-50, again, I've made a recommendation that they do verify with the CPA what the current withholding has been and the projected, whether they're projecting any amounts due, and make a conscious decision about how that should be split.
Yeah, I think that's right. You ultimately have to come up with the agreement that works for you, but you're advising them correctly and saying you got to think about these things in advance to figure out what your situation is going to be. Because the worst thing that can happen is come April or late March and you haven't figured out what you're going to do, and all of a sudden you're scrambling and you've got the divorce that's either happening or you're in that process, and it can get very messy very quickly. And if you work these things out or maybe in advance, it certainly streamlines things, and it just requires a little bit of forward thinking.
Right. So I think that we're probably making people's heads spin here. This is it's really getting into kind of some nitty gritty issues that are just so important for people to think through. Sean, we've got a couple of minutes left. Do you have any a final tip on common tax issues for our listeners?
You know, what I'll do is I'll summarize things very simply, right? And so if you're married, you have two options. You can file jointly or separately if you're still married. Most people will be filing jointly unless they think there's something suspicious going on. If you're divorced, you have the option of head of household or single. Head of household is when you have the kids. And as you said before, you can kind of alternate how that works because head of household has additional tax benefits. But really the key message is there are a lot of things that go on in the taxes. And if you think in advance and work through these issues in advance, even though, as you said, it's last on your list of settlement documents and things and forms that you work through, you can save yourself a lot of heartache and headache later down the line.
Great tips. Sean, I want to thank you for joining us today. Listeners, my guest today was Sean Lehman. Sean is an MBA and certified divorce financial analyst from Texas. He has a wonderful book for you, Divorce and Your Money. And Sean, what was the subtitle on that book?
The No Nonsense Guide. I don't put a lot of fluff. It's all just information you need to know, very simply put.
All right. And so Sean's book is available on Amazon. He also has a podcast for Divorce and Your Money, and that's available on iTunes, and you can check out his Facebook page. I feel sometimes like I'm a broken record. Getting divorced these days is a team effort. I keep stressing it's a team effort. And what we've just been talking about, it sounds so complicated. And it's just one small segment of the divorce process. And I think that just highlights that, you know, divorce these days is not a one-stop shop. There's not one person that holds all of the answers for you. And it's increasingly, we have an increasing number of different divorce professionals available with specialized knowledge, and they're there to help you. And that's the beauty of how the divorce landscape is changing these days. Assembling your team of professionals means that you can ask the right question to the right professional, get good, solid advice, and reduce the possibility of making poor decisions or choices that you'll regret later. And chances are you will be that while you are paying each professional, they will each save you their fee in reduced expenses, cost savings, or an increased benefit or the way that the assets are divided. So I really encourage you to find the right professionals to help you through your divorce and to get started understanding your tax situation. A CPA is key, and the sooner you get them involved on your case and getting them familiar with your situation, the better it's going to be.
If before you go, I want to make sure you don't miss some really important information. It's all available at divorceandyourmoney.com. The first thing you do is make sure you sign up for the email list. I will send you exclusive information and updates that I don't put anywhere else. The next thing you should do is you should check out my new course. It's called Divorce 101, Steps to Take Before Divorce. If you're on the website, click the course button, and it is everything you need to know before getting an attorney. Just by going through this course, it will save you thousands of dollars and potentially save you months of time as you go through the divorce process. And the people who've taken this course love it. It has so much information packed into about an hour and a half. It has lots of worksheets and other info to help you stay on target as you go through this process. And it includes a copy of my book, Divorce and Your Money, The No-Nonsense Guide. And on top of that, if you complete the course, it includes a discount on future one-on-one coaching services when you include the course. And just for the podcast listeners, I'm going to give you a special discount. So if you go to the courses page and when you check out, it's going to ask you for a coupon code. In that box, type in the word podcast and you're going to get a nice discount on the course. Also, as I mentioned, is you should consider getting one-on-one coaching. Look, I work with people all over the United States, whether you're in California, Texas, New York, Chicago, Miami, it doesn't matter where you are in the country. Sometimes we work on relatively simple or straightforward issues, and sometimes it's more complicated. You know, I work with people on things like, how do you fill out the financial affidavit or statement of net worth, depending on where you are in the country? Sometimes we'll discuss, well, how should I keep a specific asset? Should I keep this investment account, or maybe I should give up something else? Can I afford to stay in my home? Should I? Or should I get something else instead? Some people want to say, hey, you know what? Before I sign on the dotted line, is this settlement proposal really a good deal? Am I going to be set up not just for tomorrow, but for the rest of my life? So these are things that we can discuss on our one-on-one coaching sessions. We do them in person, by phone, or online, depending upon your needs. It's all strictly confidential. All you have to do is click on the coaching tab, fill out a short form, and we will have a discussion about your needs. Lastly, subscribe to the show and you'll get new episodes automatically. Now, if you're on iTunes, leave a review, which helps other people discover this information. If you know someone else who's thinking about divorce, maybe in the early stages of the process, or just has some information that you want to share with them, just send them a link to the show. And this is a great way to help other people. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. Thank you for listening.